and welcome to another episode of Sound Radar, Games Radar's video game music and audio podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Tong, and today I'm joined by Grant Kirkhope, the audio director of the upcoming role-playing game, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. Welcome, Grant, and thanks for joining me.
Hello. It's a pleasure.
So you've been working in the video game industry a long time, having started at Rare back in 1995, composing music and working on the sound design for several of their games. So what made you decide to actually get into video game music audio?
I think I sort of ran out of things to do, really. I was sort of, I'd been to music college and I sort of ended up playing in quite a lot of rock bands, metal bands and some soul bands and stuff. And I played in a couple of bands that were quite successful in the UK. Mm-hmm. But it all sort of came to an end after about 10 years. So I had to find something to do. So my friend Robin Beanland, who did Conker's Bad Fur Day and Killer Instinct, he was already at Rare and suggested that I try and do what he was doing. So I had like £1,000 left in my name. So I bought like a really cheap synth and a copy of Cubase and Atari ST with a meg of memory and started writing tunes, really. I mean, and I sent sort of 5 cassette tapes over to Rare over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. Never heard anything back at all.
Oh.
And all of a sudden I got a letter saying, please come for an interview, and I got the job. I just couldn't believe it. So that was it. I didn't really know what I was going to do when I got there. I just kind of thought, well, you know, that was it. I'll just try something new. My career was kind of over at that point, so it was my last chance saloon, I think.
Were you playing a lot of games back then, or do you play them now? Like, how familiar are you with video games when you started?
I think I played them a lot more back then. I think these days I don't play them as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. I think you just haven't got the time. I think I've got 2 kids now, and you know, I'm ancient and old, so you know, the kids seem to take up so much of my time, and my son's addicted to video games, unfortunately. So I tend to watch him play quite a lot. I did play a lot of World of Warcraft recently, maybe before I moved to the US. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, when I rang Blizzard to tell them that I was moving to the US and, you know, can I change my character, they don't do international transfers. And so my poor little mage, who had built up to level 70 at the time, and you know, I was most attached to, I couldn't transfer him to America to start again.
Oh,
so
no.
It sort of broke my heart, really. It broke my heart, so I was mortified. So, I do play a bit. I've played a bit of Portal 2. I've just bought a new Star Wars online thing, but my graphics card's not, can't play it just yet. But I mean, I do my homework, so I played quite a lot of the RPGs about at the time. I did, you know, I played sort of Fable and Mass Effect and, you know, bits and pieces of Dragon Age to try and see what the people were doing out there in RPG land to try and get my head around what we could do with our game. So, you know, I do kind of keep up with what's going on, but maybe not avidly as I used to.
Mm-hmm. You have an impressive list of games on your resume, including Perfect Dark, GoldenEye, Banjo-Kazooie, Viva Piñata, just to name a few. But after Rare, you moved to Big Huge Games to work on, eventually work on Kingdoms of Amalur. So how has that transition been?
It's been great, I've got to say. I mean, you know, I don't want to badmouth Rare. Rare's a fantastic place and a fantastic time there, and it's brilliant. I'm so lucky to be there and make all those great titles. But I just felt my time had come to move on. I think I sort of looked for a job half-heartedly for maybe a couple of years and didn't really do it seriously. But I really wanted to try and have a go in the US and see how I could get on doing, you know, working in the USA. So Big Huge Games sort of said, oh yes, we quite like your resume. Do you want to come and have an interview? So I came across, and I got to say, when I walked through the door, I really felt it was a really vibey, passionate place. Mm-hmm. I wanted to feel that again so much, because Rare had been such a great, vibey, you know, exciting place to be. And I just sort of felt I needed to feel that again and be somewhere that I could feel like I could make a difference and make a contribution. So I just loved, initially I liked Big Huge's website. I thought it felt like a good website. It made me want to work there. And when I got here and met the people, I just liked it so much that I thought, you know, this is a place for me to be. I was just, you know, very fortunate that they decided to take me on.
And so your role as an audio director right now, what does that entail, since you're also in charge of composing all the music as well?
When I was hired, I wasn't actually hired to write the music. It was going to be hired out to an external company. And I guess after a little while of being here, they kind of said, well, you know, since you can compose, why don't you do it? So I thought, all right, I might as well. So I guess, you know, as audio director, I'm supposed to be the guy that has the kind of the vision holder thing for how the game sounds in its entirety. So if you like, I'm the kind of filter that everything has to pass through. So Ian Smith and Mark Cromer, who both work with me here, anything they do, you know, they're very competent and excellent people. But usually it passes through me, if you like. And I do create sound design too. So we all kind of work together to get the game to sound the way it does. But I'm supposed to be the guy that has the kind of final say on yes or no to how something sounds, or how a soundscape should be, or initial ideas to areas and stuff like that. So I'm supposed to have the kind of the grand overview. Mm-hmm.
And given that Reckoning is such a huge, like, sprawling RPG, how was your approach to the music compared to all the other titles that you've worked on?
Reckoning is a gigantic game. It's immense, you know. So I think I think this is by far the biggest score written so far. You're writing something like Banjo-Kazooie or Donkey Kong, it's like it's very comedic and it's very level based and you know what you're going to do with it all kind of thing. And I think Perfect Dark was probably different because that was more of a sort of a sci-fi techno sounding game, so it had a different sounds sort of palette to it. Reckoning's sort of different again. It's a big kind of Lord of the Ringsy, you know, just a big thing. So I had to kind of think about, I didn't want music to play all the time because people could be in levels for hours and hours and hours. So I didn't want the tunes to play just all the time. So, you know, they kind of come and go, a bit like Viva Pinata. Because that's a, you know, you can be in the garden pinata for such a long time that the tunes need to come and go and not get annoying. So I just kind of decided to different areas in the game to try and represent different sections of the orchestra, mm-hmm. different areas in the game. So you know, like on the maybe a big grassy plains area, I might just use a string section of the orchestra to make it sound like nice and grand and fat and you know nice. Or maybe like in a swamp area, it might be sort of dark woodwinds. Or so I tried to do a bit of that. It's not entirely like that, but I wanted to give some kind of definite feel to where you were by using sort of leitmotif and the way the orchestra sounds to represent certain sections of the game.
And outside of like the certain sections, but was there a general mood and feeling that you were aiming for with this particular RPGs? Because a lot of times role-playing game music kind of falls into like the general epic fantasy stuff. Like, are you trying to do anything differently that would make this one stand out?
Yeah, no, I think I you know, I'm very proud of the way the soundtrack's turned out. I do think it is different. I think I was kind of thinking along the sort of a dark fairy tale sort of theme at the very start of the game, but that kind of changed into just something that was dark but moody but magical at the same time. You know, and, you know, it's kind of, Reckoning's a kind of game that anything can happen at any time, so I wanted to make sure that their kind of music could, you know, represent that stuff. I think that Reckoning does have a different sound palette to anything that's currently out there. I didn't go along that kind of traditional heroic epic thing. I just didn't want to do that. It's been done a lot of times and I felt it was done to death, you know. So very conscious of the harmonies and the kind of harmonic palette that I used to make it sound different. I wanted to make sure that it would stand out, and I do think it does. Like, it doesn't sound like a traditional sort of, I can't have to describe. I don't think it sounds like a traditional RPG at all. I think it sounds different to that.
So there's no chorals and chanting?
I got to say, I avoided choir like the plague. And there's a little bit of choir here and there, but that's just been done to death too much. It's just not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And also, I haven't used any ethnic instruments. I think that's also that kind of, you know, let's get some Irish, you know, bagpipes or some Mongolian flute or something like that. You know, I'm a great believer in using the kind of pure orchestral palette, just because I think orchestra's been around for hundreds of years. It's never going to change, you know. So if you use pure orchestra, it doesn't date very easily. I think when you start adding in other instruments, you can date something. But you know, there's a certain period in time where everyone started using, you know, ethnic stuff or ethnic flutes or ethnic something or other, you know, kind of thing. So I just didn't want to do that. I'm very conscious that was a, just steer clear of that. So I think it's a very pure orchestra. There's nothing in it. There's one thing called a waterphone, which we use in one of the areas, which is a very peculiar instrument. It's like metal rods that you can bow or scrape. So that's, I would say, the only thing that isn't pure orchestra. Everything else is the absolute pure orchestral sections. So I do think it sounds different, and particularly the boss pieces, the boss pieces I think are immense. They're really big, huge sounding pieces. We had a gigantic brass section, and I wanted to make it exciting and have sort of thematic elements as well as just pure exciting music. So I think it is a different kind of soundtrack. You may disagree, but I think it is.
Yeah. And how many hours of music did you end up composing for this?
There's probably about 2.5 hours in recording, somewhere around there.
Okay. And then since a player, and you mentioned this, is going to spend a lot of hours with the game, so how did you implement the music so that it wouldn't be like too much or maybe too little?
In every area, every region of the game, there's kind of a set of pieces that play randomly on a timer. So, you know, you can't write infinite music. So I had to write, you know, I had to kind of think about how much space there was on the disc, how much tunes we could get onto the disc itself. So I ended up writing, you know, a certain number of pieces per region, mm-hmm. plus maybe some city pieces, some interior pieces, things like that. So the pieces will play on a timer randomly, but there's a main theme, little kind of piece for every area you go into, which you'll probably hear more than any of the rest of them. And the rest of them will rotate randomly.
And what are some of your most memorable tracks that you've worked on?
I don't want to mention some of them, because some of the names might give away what happens in the game. So
oh,
I can't
no.
mention all of them.
Yeah, no spoiler tracks.
I can't say that. I'm very proud of the boss music. So the boss music is very big, and I did take an awful lot of time over that. Kind of looking towards John Williams for that kind of thing. I think John Williams writes very good, exciting music. He has this kind of technique where you'll slot in like a really big theme, and then it'll be just go to, I kind of call it treading water music, where it's very exciting but isn't particularly thematic. It's just all over the place, and it helps to get, so you get that kind of, because on a boss piece it depends how good the player is, how long it's going to last for before they beat the boss. It may be 10 minutes, maybe half an hour if they're a bad player, you know. So you have to be able to write music that hopefully rises, falls down again, all that kind of stuff, you know. So I'm very proud of those pieces. There's a particular piece in the Planes, it's probably called something like Plane 7, unfortunately. It's just a nice string piece that I just really like. You know, I think I'm hard pushed really to pull out anything that I really think's fun. You know, the best of everything. I'm just proud of all of it. I'm really happy with the way it turned out in the general. It's been a very rewarding experience to do it all.
Oh, good. And as a trumpet player, do you favor brass in your compositions, or are there other instruments that you like to use?
I do like brass a lot, I've got to say, but I think sometimes, because when I write music, I'm writing a MIDI mock-up, so I've got, like, you know, some very big sample libraries that are very expensive and very good, but it never quite sounds like the actual thing. So I think sometimes you can be steered away from instruments because they don't sound as you want them to sound. You end up avoiding the samples because they're not very good. Mm-hmm. So I think as a brass player, sometimes I can sort of shy away from the brass because I don't think the samples sound very good. It doesn't, and it sort of puts me off. But I think knowing that we're going to be using full orchestra from the start, I sort of, you know, my MIDI demos are pretty good. But so I did end up using, you know, the brass a lot, of course. But I'm a big, you know, I love all of the, I just really like full orchestra. It's a great sound. I mean, I played trumpet from 6 years old, and I sat in orchestras for all my life, you know, right up to 2022. So I mean, I like that medium. It's a great medium to use. It's so versatile, and it can give you the most horrific noise or the most beautiful sounding, you know, thing. So I think it's something that I like to use. It's a great resource. But I don't think I would favor anything particularly. I just like all of it.
What inspires you while you're composing music?
Well, you know, I've got to say that the Big Huge People here have made such a fantastic looking game that you're hard not to be inspired by it. I just tried to make the soundtrack sound like it looked, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they've created such beautiful worlds, and that it is a really, truly beautiful game. And I mean, you just can't help want to write some music for it. It just, you know, it really does inspire you. And I spent a lot of time listening to Harry Potter as well. I'm a huge John Williams Harry Potter fan. So the first three films that he scored were a big inspiration to me. I used that a lot to kind of get me going, kind of thing, you know. So I think a combination of Harry Potter and looking at the game probably did it, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
So in terms of sound design, what was your approach there?
I think you have to be careful with a game like ours because it's so huge, you can easily get lost in it. It's very easy to have a very grand sort of utopian view of this amazing soundscape. And, you know, and you can't really start like that. You have to start in very small increments and make it, you know, pay a lot of attention to detail. So we start very basically and start, you know, kind of, you know, not build a tower on marbles, if you know what I mean. We kind of start a very, look at the very, so you come to the first area, it's a forest. So we have a very basic ambience that plays in the forest, which would just be like grass or trees hissing. A very basic stereo sample that plays all the time. And then we layer on top of that, and we'll have these kind of folders that are full of bird noises, so that'll be birds tweeting, and that'll play on a random timer at a random pitch and random in the 360 space and surround, so they can play out of any speaker, any time, any pitch, any volume kind of thing. So that's with the next starter, but you'll layer up more things like that, like moths in the trees, that bits and pieces like that, and then we'll add positional sounds, which are things like you want to pass a waterfall or a fire burning or something like that. And so in these kind of small increments we take a very small step and you end up with this big soundscape at the end of it all. So I think we kind of do it. I don't think we do anything that's completely rocket science or, you know, groundbreaking. It's just, it's attention to detail in very small steps. And if you do it like that way, you always end up with a nice sounding soundscape at the end of it all.
Yeah, it's the littlest things that make the biggest difference.
Yeah, for definite, yeah.
And what would you say would be some of the weirdest things you have to do to get the sound that you want?
We squashed quite a lot of melons for blood noises, quite a lot of that. Stabbing melons with knives and things, that was quite exciting. Made quite a lot of mess as well, so that was a bit unfortunate. That was good. We banged garbage sacks around to get some kind of clanky noises. Broken a few things, you know, things like that, really. I think, you know, you have to kind of, we kind of do it as needs must. You know, we have a big CD library full of sound effects. You kind of bread and butter noises that, you know, you like your footsteps, whatever, you're probably going to get from there. But your specialist noises, like any kind of voice type or, you know, monster grunts and stuff, you have to find other ways to do that stuff. And, you know, hitting melons is quite a good way to get a nice splatty blood noise.
It seems like fruits and vegetables are always harmed during these sound designs.
Yes, unfortunately, I think that's very true. Yes, it's obligatory, I think.
And so sound has come a long way, given the technology that you have available now. Do you find it harder these days or easier compared to back when you first started?
I don't know. You know, I've got to say, I don't think that, I'm probably going to get killed for this, but I don't think audio has changed a lot in the 16 years I've been doing it, really. It's, you know, you still basically get a sample, get it into some kind of editor, fiddle about with it, stick it in the game, see what it sounds like, and then then do the next one. You know, it's like, the tools may have changed and the quality's changed, you know, like, you know, I was looping cymbals on GoldenEye, which is an appalling thing to have to do, you know, back then, you know. So certainly now with full CD, you know, soundtracks and lots of memory, it's a lot easier. But you still have to, you know, I think it's just, I always think that the most important tool in a sound design is how good your ear is. If you hear the right, you know, the right noise, you've got 50 samples, you can have 10. Can you pick the best 10 samples that are there? You know, that's more important to me. I think the tool chain may change, and you may have different editors and different this and different that, but I don't really care about that. Does it sound good? That's my, you know, that's all I care about. I mean, some guys might have this great, huge, elaborate tool chain. They put it into this and then to that, and here and bounce it in, do all that with it, and it comes out and it sounds awful. Yeah. You might get some guys got one bit of crappy software, it sounds fantastic. So I don't really care about the kind of tool path bit. You know, obviously we have to learn to use different tools and different bits and pieces, and, you know, things change over the years, but I think the basic thing, the way that audio works in games, hasn't changed, and probably won't either. I think it'll probably stay the same.
And has the size and limits, I know that has changed. Like back then, it's like you actually only had a certain amount of space to use. And now, are you approaching the point where you can pretty much use any sound and you don't have to, you know, manipulate it to get it to fit? Or like,
No. The programs will kill me. No, you can't do that. You still got to be careful. It's like, you know, we have issues when we were just going through the final bug testing where some sounds were too large. Because it depends on what, you know, if you get like, 85 monsters jump out on you, the chances are that half of them aren't going to play any noise because the game can't get them into ramming time, or just not enough room. So it's a big juggling act about, you know, throwing things out, loading things in, throwing things back, loading things in, and all that kind of stuff. You're still limited by that. I don't think, you know, the time will probably come maybe where that might not happen, but I would imagine if you just got more memory, you just use better quality sounds, like, you know, 48 kilohertz, 24-bit, or even bigger. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't think it's ever going to get to kind of time when the programmers aren't going to complain about something. I'm surely, you know, I've had plenty of stuff we've had to change here. So I think it's, you know, you've got to think about, you know, like the Xbox is particularly slow at streaming from disk, and the seek time's particularly slow. So, you know, things like that, you have to, there's always something that's going to weigh you down that just, you know, annoys you. And so I think that, you know, there's still limitations. You just have to be, you know, I guess coming, being an old fogey like I am and doing it from, you know, donkey's years ago, that I'm probably used to having to juggle that to try and make it a bit more, you know, used to kind of memory limitations and try to fit things into small spaces, where I think perhaps maybe some of the newer guys may not be, because they're lucky to have big DVDs to put it on. So I guess I'm a bit old school, I suppose. I think, you know, obviously the quality is very good these days, but, you know, it's not limitless by no means.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say your biggest challenges are when working as an audio director?
Probably something like reminding everybody in the company that the things that they do may require audio. I must admit, I think I almost preach till I'm blue in the face. We have a breakfast meeting on Tuesday mornings every Tuesday here, and I say the same things every week. I say to people, if you do work on some kind of asset, whatever it may be, in your scrum group, and you finished it, make sure that you then think, it's done now, does it need any audio? And if it does, please tell your producer and they will tell me. And that's my little speech that I do every Tuesday morning. I think, you know, people just do forget about audio. I mean, I think it just, I've never known it being any different, and I scream till I'm blue in the face and it never changed. And I can't seem to stop screaming about it, but it just gets me down. But it's just the way it's got, I can't see it changing. People just forget, you know. Animators do a great big huge animation with a massive big sword swing and a huge impact, and then forget to say, oh, it might need some sound, you know. So that would be my biggest gripe, I suppose. Apart from that, everyone at Big PhD is great people, but that's my biggest gripe.
One day we'll get there.
Yeah, one day.
And how do you feel video game music has evolved since you first started, and where do you see it heading?
Well, it's evolved immensely, hasn't it? I mean, when I think back to doing, you know, the tune for GoldenEye, you know, which was like a minute long, and they looped about 50 billion times on a level, you know, and think, you know, it was like, it's immensely different. And, you know, fitting, I think Banjo-Kazooie fitted into 2 megabit, and that was all the music and all the sound effects. Uh-huh. And, you know, for me writing that stuff to full orchestras, I mean, you know, after like five orchestral full scores now, it's incredible that, you know, I was sat there working at Rare on the first day doing Donkey Kong 2 on the Game Boy with like 3 channels and a noise channel, 1 note each, you know, on a black screen full of hex numbers, thinking, how the hell am I supposed to do this? To, you know, sitting in Prague going, excuse me, cellos, bar 4, you're a bit too loud. You know, so I think it's, you know, it's massively different. It's like it's changed so much. I think how you write a tune in your head, it's never going to change. It's the same thing, but who ends up playing it's obviously a bit different to what it was like then to compared to what it's like now. Mm-hmm. I think the music's probably going to get, the good thing about having MIDI music in the old days was it's very interactive. Like, you know, all that kind of channel changing in Banjo-Kazooie and stuff was very easy then. You could do all that kind of stuff. And it's harder when you've got like full streaming stereo tracks from a disc. It's difficult because you've got load times and you can't have too many streams going at once, all that kind of stuff. So I think that will probably get better, so we'll be able to have fully interactive orchestral music. That'll be a big step forward. I don't think we're quite there yet technically, but we are going to get there, there's no doubt about it. And that'll be fantastic, you know, that you can change from, like Banjo-Kazooie, you can change from fight, you know, from, you, the tune changes from which area you go to, from, like, you know, underwater, to all that kind of things that we did all way back then. That'll eventually happen to like full streaming or, you know, audio, whether it's, you know, electronic music or Christian music. I think it will get there, but it's not quite there yet.
Mm. Next generation, you think?
I don't know. It's just hard to know. It's all about, you know, the technical things in the console, how it's going to go. If they've got plenty of space and they've got the disk times faster, the seek times faster, all that, you know, we could have multiple streams at once, you know, lots and lots of streams. You know, you've got to think about, if you've got, say, you're in a space in a game and there might be 8 sections of that, you have to be able to have 8 stereo things that are going to load and, you know, and unload and fade together perfectly. So you've got to keep track of all those stereo streams at the same time with markers. So when you fade to the next section, it goes to the next stream in the right place, you know. And if someone runs around these sections, it's going to be having to load very quickly mm-hmm. to get from stream to stream to stream. You know, all that kind of thing you got to think about. So, you know, I can't imagine we're not going to get there. I just don't think we're there yet.
Yeah. And so the Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning soundtrack is coming bundled with the limited editions of the game, and there are multiple types. And can you tell people what they will be expecting from the soundtrack?
Oh, it'll be magnificent. No, it's not just out with it. It's actually going to be released by itself. It's not just with the packs thing.
Good.
Yeah, it gets released on February 7th, so it's out. And, you know, you can get it on iTunes and Amazon and all that stuff. And it'll be out as a physical CD as well. I think it's 75 minutes of music, so I have to kind of squash it down a little bit. I think just about everything's on there. I mean, what I did was for the regions of the game that I've got, the one-shot tunes, I'd maybe picked four or five of those and faded them all together to make one sort of continuous track. So not all the music's on the CD. I was thinking that maybe we might, you know, give it as a free download later or something like that, possibly, for the rest of it. But I mean, most of the flavor, every flavor in the game, I'd say, is on the CD, and all the boss pieces there, of course. Mm-hmm. So, I'm bound to say it's good because I wrote it. I'm very proud of it. I think people will get something from it. I think if you're into games music or movie music, you'll like it.
Mm-hmm. And my last question I have for you. So for someone who would want to get into the same line of work as you, what kind of advice would you have for them?
I'll tell you what, I've got a website and I get asked that question about a million times a day, and it's very difficult. I think when I started, it was very few people doing it back then. And I was hired at Rare as some kind of loose musician composer job title thing, you know, kind of thing. We all sort of fell into it and didn't know what we were doing, really. And I think these days I haven't seen a video games company advertise for a pure composer for a very long time. And that's usually because you've got some old fart like me who's been sat there for years doing it and it's not going anywhere fast, you know. So I always say to people, you know, it's worth looking at sound design, because most companies do look for sound designers, you know, now and then. I would look at that for definite as a way into the industry. But a lot of the times, if companies know that you're a composer and you're trying to apply for a sound design job, they're going to think that you're going to angle for the composing job at some point. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a sort of a bad person to ask about this, because I honestly don't. I think because I'm so old and ancient, I don't really know how you'd go about it these days. I go to this thing called Magfest. I'm going this weekend in Washington. It's a big kind of music games festival thing. And I met Danny Baranowski, who's the guy that did Super Meat Boy Sam. And that new one, what's the new one called? I forget the name.
Binding of Isaac.
That's it. Yes. And, you know, he sort of just had been writing music for years, just sort of fell into it, really. And, you know, and said, I said, well, how do you do it? So he said, I don't really know. I sort of knew the guys who did the game, and I ended up doing the game music for that. And then just got lucky, really. I think, you know, you just have to get lucky. I think there's plenty of sort of university websites or film or games, sort of, you know, amateur websites where people are making a game and want music and can't pay you, but you can do it for free. And I think that's a pretty good idea, I think, you know, because you're never going to know who the stars of tomorrow are, you know. So, I mean, I would offer to do music for free for people like that who are making a student game or a student movie and all that. You know, that's a very good way to get into it. Mm-hmm. It gets your resume started, it gets your portfolio together. You start to understand what, you know, the requirements of doing a score for anything like that. I think that's probably quite a good way to do it. I think, you know, lots of times the reason that Steven Spielberg and John Williams end up doing all the films together is because they've known each other for years. You know, Spielberg wanted to have Williams do his tunes from right from the very word go, and a lot of times the directors know a composer from donkey years ago and just use that guy because he's a friend and they like him. I think that's a way in, really. And if you can find somebody who's going to be the star of tomorrow, it may be a very good, very fortunate meeting if you manage to do tunes for their early stuff, you know. So I think actually a lot of companies outsource music, you know, they don't have in-house guys like me that are doing it, really. I've got to say, I do think that it makes it so much better if the guy's working actually in the building. I think, it, you know, you do get that connection with the game. You're not just writing some sort of, you know, track. I want a battle piece, mate. You go from write it and then hand it over and get paid, and that's it. You know, I think that it's nice to be part of the team and to be sitting here and look at how the game progresses and all that kind of stuff. But I think that to get to be a pure games composer now is just difficult. I mean, you know, I think when I was hired as a, you know, to do sound effects and music, and I've always done that. And I think, you know, I think these days it seems to be the roles are very split in half, like there's just sound designers and just composers. And I don't think I agree with that, really. If you can do both, why not? I don't really think, I don't like to have that stigma attached to you that you can just do one or the other. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be this way these days that that's how it goes. That composers sit in a room somewhere, outsourcing, you know, looking out the window, writing tunes, and sound designers work in the company. I don't really agree with that. I don't like it, but you know, who am I? What do I know?
Oh, okay. Well, I really wanted to thank you for your time. It was great talking to you.
I've enjoyed it. I mean, we're sort of reckonings. Well, I think it's actually done as of yesterday, I think. So I'm sitting here with my feet up, doing nothing to do.
Oh, so it's all done. It's out of your hands now.
Well, if only that was true, eh? If only that was true.
The work is never over. Yeah,
think about the games. You just, you know, there's always something to do. There's always someone saying that's not quite right, or you know, you find something that's wrong, or you know, there's always something to do. So, but reckoning, I would say it's in the can, reckoning. So that's done. So,
and that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks everyone for listening, and be sure to follow Sound Radar on Twitter @gr_soundradar for updates and future giveaways.